This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
Can I also mention that after every Hurricanes game, there's a Canes Corner podcast, morning after edition, and we'll be busy this week, so we will not be getting a lot of sleep. Tomorrow we could be loopy. That will be fun. So we are heading into the last full week before the NFL draft, Alec. The nightmare is almost over. I'm so excited for this. We could have had the draft a month ago, but nope, the draft is next Thursday. And only the first round is next Thursday. We'll make 32 selections on Thursday, then we need a nap, and then we will make two rounds worth of selections on Friday, and then we need another full night's sleep, and then we'll finish it up on Saturday. Trevor Lawrence, the obvious first pick in the draft, was essentially labeled a non-competitor last week, right? Remember that? So, you know, I guess... You know, his words got twisted. Then his dad made some comments about how football wasn't the most important thing in his life. Then we ended up having this ridiculous conversation about how badly he wants it. Let me give you this example, Alec. I love doing this for a living. I mean, I wake up every day and I'm like, man, we get to go talk on the radio about stupid things for a living. I mean, it's great. But it's not who I am, right? It's not who I am, and I'm still able to deliver at a high... Wait a second, that's a bad example. I apologize for that. Clearly, we fall short more often than not. But Trevor Lawrence, he doesn't have to be defined by his win-loss record.
Oh.
Right? All right, so here's how Jacksonville...
It's his job. Like, it's hard for people to accept that because they elevate these jobs to... a certain status because it's playing pro sports and that seems really cool. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's what these guys do every single day.
What do you think a cool job would be outside of this?
Professional tailgater.
That's very good. I like that.
Yeah, I'd be great at that.
I like that.
But man, like there'd probably be some days where it's just like, I just can't start drinking beer at 9 a.m. today. I got to start, like, later. Just give me six more hours, please.
And then somebody would criticize you for not...
Right. What are you talking about, dude?
You don't really want it enough, right. Alec. It's very good. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN on how Jacksonville views their guy based on those comments.
Well, Nicole, I asked around on this, and the Jacksonville Jaguars have no issues with Trevor Lawrence's willingness and drive to be great. So these two sides have spent significant time on Zoom meetings in the last few months just to get to know each other. They've talked about football. They've talked about life. They've talked about the playbook. And both are in a really good place, a place of excitement. And Lawrence, in fact, is excited what Coach Urban Meyer will bring, trying to maximize players in his first year as an NFL head coach. I spoke to somebody close to Lawrence this weekend. They said, look, the guy's been under a microscope as one of the best players in the country for about 5 to 6 years coming out of high school. This is just the way he compartmentalizes and deals with things to find a life balance. But make no mistake about it, Urban Meyer took this job in Jacksonville largely because of Trevor Lawrence. I spoke to an exec this weekend who said, Meyer, if the Jacksonville Jaguars were picking second, he might be coaching the University of Texas right now, making $10 to $12 million a year. He has coveted Lawrence for the last few years, dating back to watching him in Clemson in the playoffs 2 years ago. And quick injury update on Lawrence. He had that shoulder surgery on the non-throwing shoulder a couple months ago. I'm told he's already been throwing the ball for a few weeks now. He's still eyeing a training camp return.
All right, a couple of things. I'll work backwards. Urban Meyer took the job largely because of Trevor Lawrence? What do you mean? What do you mean largely because of Trevor Lawrence? Only because of Trevor Lawrence. Only. And the other thing is, they talked about football and they talked about life. So what do you think Urban Meyer's asking Trevor Lawrence on a Zoom call? Read any good books? What are you reading right now, Trevor? Movies? We haven't been able to go out to the movies. What are you watching on Netflix? Are you binging any shows? What are they talking about? They're only talking about football. Stop. Just stop. We don't have to make it any more complicated than it is.
Hey, Trevor, how you doing? I'm good, Coach. How are you? What do you need? I just wanted to talk.
I just want to find out how you are, man. Right? Are you vegan? Have you thought about going vegan? Why are we doing this?
I don't know. I guess maybe there's some value, I guess, to just getting to know somebody on a personal level.
I'm sure you do. Like, what do you like to do in your spare time? You play golf?
Yeah.
Right? What's your best score? You played Sawgrass? Have you played TPC? You done that? I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, small talk, I guess. I don't know. I mean, maybe they mix in football with the small talk.
Gosh, it's all about football with Urban Meyer. We know this. I don't think he's capable of having a conversation with a player that isn't football based. Anyway, and I don't mean that to be disparaging. He is supremely tunnel visioned. A couple of quick things about Trevor Lawrence. I think he is about to get one of the all time best career reprieves. And I'll bring up an example because I think he is about to essentially fade into anonymity. A few years ago, I had a conversation with J.J. Redick. This is after he was about to leave Duke. He had completed his eligibility. We were in a hotel room. I believe we're in Indianapolis. I'm not 100% sure where we were when Duke's Final Four run, or not Final Four, NCAA tournament run, which ended in the Sweet 16 that year, happened. But because their last year they lost to LSU. His last year they lost to LSU. Anyway, we were talking about just living in the fishbowl when you're the star player at a place like Duke. And that, in my opinion, I think you're going to go to the NBA and you're just going to fade into the background. It's going to be like the easiest thing in the world for you to adjust to. Because, I mean, whether we think these athletes love it or not, they don't love every single moment of their lives being lived out publicly. And that's what Redick was as a Duke player, not even as a Duke senior, really, from his sophomore year on. The college basketball world revolved around J.J. Redick. And for the most part, the college football world has been Trevor Lawrence's playground. He was the face of the sport, even though they only won one national championship with Trevor Lawrence. But he was the face of the sport for 3 years. And so he is going to, even as the first pick overall, he's going to drop into the background. He's just going to be a guy. And as long as he isn't a complete bust, and I don't think that's going to happen, as long as he is not a complete bust, he's just going to be a guy. And there's nothing wrong with that. So, Jacksonville? Come on. How many NFL franchises get more coverage than Jacksonville other than, well, all of them? Is there a franchise that gets less coverage than Jacksonville? Like, that has less interest?
I don't know.
In the entire league?
No.
I don't think so. You're going to this is going to sound the worst, the lowest rung on the NFL ladder. It's perfect. Complete and utter anonymity for Trevor Lawrence. And I think it'll be good for him. He'll get a chance to kind of learn and grow. He's got at least 3, maybe 4 years to really develop into something very good to great. Good for him. Good for him. There is pressure. And there's pressure all across, but it's a great spot, man. This is so much better than being in New York.
I wonder if I don't know. I don't know where Carolina falls into that mix.
They're not. I don't think Carolina is that much higher on the ladder, but they're higher on the ladder.
But I look in that division, Indy. How about Indy?
I think the Colts are
pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think the Colts are a big franchise.
How about Tennessee?
I considered Tennessee. Tennessee is ahead of Jacksonville, but again, I think they're pretty low on that in the overall pecking order. Detroit is probably
How about Tampa? No, Tampa just won Super Bowl, obviously, but
yes, Tampa's generally low on the list, but now they have Tom Brady, so they're high on the list.
Right.
Until Tom Brady leaves, and then they're back to being way low on the list. Yeah, I mean, that's true. There's nothing, there's no heritage for those franchises. But at least Tampa has now won two Super Bowls. Jacksonville, not so much. All right, let me get one more thing in here before we take our first break. Because this was an eventful weekend of European football, Alec. An eventful weekend. I know you're dialed in. Lionel Messi scored a bananas goal. Did you see this?
I haven't seen it, no.
He dribbled through everybody, passed it, got it back, then dribbled through everybody again and scored.
That's what he does.
That's what he
does. Yes. Basically every Messi goal ever.
It was tremendous. And he dribbled through everybody like in close quarters too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was absolutely phenomenal. Real quick aside, I'm going to say this out loud. If people want to debate me on this, that's fine. I think soccer highlights are the best highlights in sports. Because every soccer highlight is a, holy crap, did you see that? And they're, in many ways, all very different. Every NBA highlight is one of two things. A dunk or a three. Now, we get great dunks, but that's what NBA highlights are about. They're either dunks or threes. Football, touchdown pass. It's a touchdown pass. Or maybe it's a big run. Big run where somebody bowls over three guys, fights his way into the end zone. Maybe it's an interception, but it's basically a touchdown pass.
You missed division or FCS football highlight from Villanova this weekend.
I saw it. It's an incredible highlight. That was an incredible highlight.
Still a touchdown pass if you boil it down.
Yes, but it was there. If ESPN was doing it right when they played that highlight, they would have had Sweet Georgia Brown playing in the background because it was a little Harlem Globetrotter-ish. Very good. But by the way, Jose Mourinho got sacked at Tottenham.
I saw that.
That didn't last long.
17 months.
That didn't last long.
We knew that was coming, though, right?
Jose Mourinho is going to get fired from everywhere. All right, and this
he's like the Tortorella of English Premier Soccer, I think.
Well, no, Torts has lasted a long time with the Blue Jackets now.
Yeah, what's that, four seasons or so?
I think it's
three?
Longer. I think okay. It's six.
Oh, okay.
Now, I could be wrong. You might very well be right.
Well, I mean, you know, Mourinho lasted how long with, what was it, Arsenal? Was he with for a long time?
Chelsea?
Chelsea?
What's the difference?
Where he was there for...
What's the difference between Chelsea and Arsenal?
Long, long time.
If I read you a roster from either team, could you tell me the difference?
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, every now and again, the squirrel finds a nut. But for the most part, like, people just get over Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
Like, they get over John Tortorella
pretty quick. He was, at one point, like, great. And now he just keeps, like, no, you're no good anymore. But this happened over the weekend, and it's a big deal. The top dozen clubs announced that they are starting their own version of the Champions League to This Is Beautiful. Air quotes, help the sport globally. As though that is a consideration for any of them. Here's a quote. We will help football at every level and take it to its rightful place in the world. Football is the only global sport in the world with more than 4 billion fans, and our responsibility as big clubs is to respond to their desires. What a crock! What an absolute lie that is. It's about money. It's only about money. It's only about tons of money. Only about tons of money for those dozen clubs, plus three more yet to be named. They don't give a damn about the global reach, only their own fans. And it's not even their own fans. They just give a damn about putting their best team and making the most money, and that brings them more fans because they don't care that you, the fan, is home watching these games. They do not. They don't care about the rest of the teams in their own league. This isn't going to be helpful to the West Hams or the Leicester Cities or the Southamptons of the world, nor any of the clubs not named Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga, which, by the way, Bayern isn't even part of this yet. But they will be. The six clubs are Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham, Man City, Man U, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Juventus, Inter Milan, although they're called something else now, and AC Milan. I think Internacional, I think, is how we call them in Serie A. But Bayern Munich, Paris Saint-Germain are going to be part of it. I don't know who the 15th club is going to be, although PSG has a little bit of a complication because they own the international TV rights or the European TV rights to Champions League. Like, their club, like, makes the money off of Champions League. And all of these clubs, the 12 that have already announced, are part, have all, like, withdrawn from Champions League going forward. This is going to be wild to watch. Quick example of where this happens, or I'm sorry, already happened in the United States. This is college football. It's what it is. College football, where the top conferences, and really the top teams in the top conferences, have concentrated the financial power. So, if you are an international soccer, club soccer fan, and you think, man, this is terrible, and you probably should, just college football, same damn thing. Same damn thing. Every Monday through the draft. So we have two more Mondays after this with Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick Six podcast moderator. He joins us to talk all things football. And I want to start, first of all, thank you very much for your time. I value all the minutes we get together. Did that sound sincere?
Yeah, it sounded sincere. A little bit cheesy, but sincere.
It was very intentionally cheesy, but you know how much I love you. All right, so on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning, they were talking about quarterbacks in new spots with a lot of pressure, and Keyshawn basically said there's not a ton of pressure on Sam Darnold. But there's been so much talk about Darnold's the step up in talent around him. I'm not sure there's that big a step up in talent other than the fact that Christian McCaffrey is elite and he didn't have an elite running back. The offensive line situations, we don't know yet. But I just think that there's an upgrade in stability, and I think that could mean as much as anything for Darnold.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there's a decent amount of pressure on Sam Darnold, although obviously going from the Jets to the Panthers is going to reduce the amount of pressure on you. I think if he had stayed in New York and played for the Jets this season, and, you know, the final year of his rookie deal, not fifth year option notwithstanding, that the amount of pressure on him then would have been, you know, tenfold. So I guess you could say that there is less pressure on him for sure. And I do agree with you. The floor for Sam Darnold to be raised in a competent offense with I think if you look at the Jets, not entirely last year, but certainly the last 2 years, really some of the worst offensive talent and worst skill position guys and worst offensive line in football. And it was just asking too much of almost any quarterback to come in and elevate those guys into, you know, a playoff caliber team or a 500, you know, caliber team. And I don't know that Sam Darnold would necessarily do that in his first year in Carolina, but I think with Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, you know, you have Greg Little hadn't panned out the way that they wanted, but Taylor Moton, you know, they have Matt Paradis there. They have talent on the offensive line. If it can come together after maybe a year of working in Joe Brady's system. And then I think that eighth pick suddenly is fascinating, Adam, because you could go with Devontae Smith. You could go with Rashawn Slater, Penei Sewell, depending on who falls there to you at eight. And I really think when you look at the Sam Darnold trade, it was orchestrated with that eighth overall pick in mind, understanding that there was a chance the Panthers could not get a quarterback at that spot, but that they could help supplement the quarterback they did acquire with the eighth pick, whether it's a wide receiver, which I think is still a possibility, or more likely an offensive lineman in a class that has some real nice offensive linemen up top.
I think there are I was reading Peter King's column this morning, and one NFL, I guess it was a coach, said that there is one guy in this draft that he absolutely sees going to the Hall of Fame, and it was Penei Sewell, and he said he reminds him of Jonathan Ogden. Imagine putting Jonathan Ogden at left tackle for the next 12 years and how that would elevate the Panthers as an organization. Because there is a correlation between having dominant left tackles, Anthony Munoz, even Tony Boselli's, even though Boselli necessarily didn't play for amazing teams, but it elevates teams when you have one of the best players in the game at that position.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Penei Sewell, you know, it's easy to start to nitpick him a little bit when you get closer to the draft process and you point out he opted out last year, so there's not a ton of recent film on him. There's some concern that maybe he doesn't max out his effort on every single play, but you know, that's what happens when you're watching, you know, 475 reps of an offensive lineman taking dropbacks. Incredibly athletic, incredibly strong, freak of nature in terms of size and strength and speed and all that. So from that perspective, if he's there at eight, it feels like kind of a no-brainer. I wouldn't begrudge the Panthers. You know, you look at their wide receiver depth chart, and Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore are a very nice combination, and you can blend McCaffrey in there too. But, you know, it's not – I mean, if something happens to DJ Moore, like he gets banged up, you know, Robbie Anderson's in the final year of his deal, DJ mm-hmm. Moore in the final year of his rookie deal with the fifth-year option coming as well. They're not exactly deep at that position. That's just something to at least monitor in the event that maybe Sewell goes five to the Bengals or six to the Dolphins or even seven to the Lions, which is entirely possible. And then Carolina has to decide, all right, you know, there's a really high-end caliber wide receiver, whether it's Jalen Waddle or Devontae Smith sitting there for us at eight. Do we go that direction instead of taking the second-best tackle?
Yeah, like there are mock drafts on CBSSports.com that have Rashawn Slater as the first best tackle. So it could, yes, I've seen them. There are so many mock drafts at CBSSports.com
and
that
yet
don't have Will Brinson's name above them.
Yeah, I'm going to do, I think I'll do, I might just do one. Maybe I'll just do one this year.
Now I don't want you to do one.
No, I'm definitely going
to
do one.
Now I don't want you to do one.
Okay, all right, I won't do one. I'm not doing one, to be perfectly honest.
I'll tell you,
I don't think that, I think that the draft took longer to kick in for me from an excitement factor this year than maybe ever before. And I don't know if that's because there's no combine and the schedule is altered and all
right.
that or whatever it was. Or maybe it's because, you know, we've known who the number one pick was going to be for, you know, 13, maybe 24 months, however long, you know, we know Trevor Lawrence is going to be the first overall pick if he came out. And I think that the trade up by the 49ers to three sort of got the juices flowing. And it's not a really exciting class either, to be honest. I mean, the quarterbacks are top heavy and they're really intriguing from, after Lawrence, who do you take it to? Who do you take it three perspective? But it's mostly offensive linemen and cornerbacks, a very nice wide receiver group, no edge player, no defensive lineman mm-hmm. at all. No, the edge class is just not that great. Micah Parsons is there at linebacker, but defensively, it's not a great class outside of the top cornerbacks. I wouldn't be surprised if we see 20-plus offensive players taken in the first round.
I'll 100% agree with you. Something else from Peter King's column that I think it spoke to me. It's almost as though Peter was listening to me and thought, you know what? Let me do this research. Did you see the average draft position of the first quarterback taken in the draft from 1980 through 1999 versus the average draft or 2000 versus the average draft position from 2001 through last year? Did you see the difference between the two?
Yeah, I did. I was reading it this morning, but like a quarter of the way into my first cup of coffee, so I don't exactly remember the numbers.
It's essentially
it's 20 way up.
20 to 2.
Wow, that is, I mean,
it might not be 20. It might be like 16.
Used to work?
Right. So here's my question to you. It's a broad brush question. So are we simply creating more great quarterbacks or are teams doing it wrong?
Yes. It's a bit of both. Like there are more quarterbacks who are prepared to acclimate themselves to the NFL level from the college level because of the blend of schemes and the similarity of schemes and how teams operate at the NFL and college level. It's a lot closer. It's a lot more homogenous. The Venn diagram there in terms mm-hmm. of what they run is a lot larger. The circles that are connecting. But also, you know, go back to 2011. And, you know, NFL teams, there's a reason why, you know, NFL teams cycle in and out of relevance in terms of their ability to be successful on the field. And it's because, frankly, not many people are good at running football teams, and they get nervous and they panic, and they like to reach, you know, Christian Ponder, Blaine Gabbert, Jake Locker, all going ahead of, you know, future Hall of Famers like J.J. Watt and Tyron Smith, Cameron Jordan. I mean, so many good players in that draft. And I think that, you know, that speaks to how this sort of works out, right? Like when Arizona mm-hmm. traded up to get Josh Rosen because he was the last guy on the board, and they needed a quarterback. But by and large, there are more good quarterbacks coming in. And I don't know if that is a, you know, I think it's mostly because they're blending the, you know, the schemes and all that at the college level in a similar way that they do at the NFL level. Also training and just preparedness and how they approach things differently. Like the way that these guys come into the NFL now, these quarterbacks in 2021, a little bit different than 1984 when those guys were rolling in.
I'm only going to disagree with you in this regard. I don't think we have better quarterbacks coming into the league. I don't think they're more ready. Because if they were more ready, we wouldn't be drafting quarterbacks as often as we do in the top five. By the way, I just want to get the numbers right. From 80 to 2000, it was 13.9, the average position of the first quarterback taken in the draft. That's just the first. The average draft slot of the first quarterback picked from 2001 to today, 2.1. So it goes from 13.9, roughly 14, to 2. And I would argue that it's just teams desperately seeking out the quarterback that they believe is going to be that guy. But we have too many teams that have drafted multiple quarterbacks in the top five.
Look at Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts is the second best player in this draft class. And he would go number two overall if you were just drafting mm-hmm. based on, do I need to acquire the best player?
Right.
But the Jets have to get a quarterback.
I agree with you.
Chasing a quarterback since Joe Namath left.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the 49ers see themselves as an opportunity to come up and get a quarterback in a deeper quarterback class. So, yeah, it is a combination of it's an easier acclimation to the NFL than it used to be. And, you know, a need for quarterbacks. And it would be very interesting. Some team at some point in the future, and maybe it's Kyle Shanahan, I don't think it will be given he traded all his first-round picks, but will they decide to just start churning through quarterbacks on rookie deals? Because that's really how you would save your, you know, if you wanted to be really creative and ahead of the curve, you know, just bring a guy in every 4 years. We see these guys. They can play well for a couple of years, and then you can move on for the next guy.
I mean, theoretically, if with the salary cap going up, if you were paying your quarterback for 4 years, essentially minimum wage, it would allow you to get the rest of your team better. But ultimately, if you don't have somebody competent at the position, you're going to be limited when you come up against the great team. So you have to have a quarterback who ultimately can win you a game when they need to.
Tom Fornelli had a great galaxy brain theory on this too, by the way. He said, maybe Kyle Shanahan is drafting Mac Jones because he knows he won't be good enough to warrant a second contract, but he will be good enough to win football games
right.
on his first contract.
I'm sure they get that newspaper in the great city of Louisville, where our friend Mark Ennis is from ESPN Louisville. He probably has a radio show to do in a matter of moments, but he's going to kill time with us here. My friend Mark Ennis joins us on the Adam Gold Show. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. You are right, by the way. That is totally the Herald Leader there, Kentucky.com.
Yeah, you know, when they do that, when they do Kentucky.com, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just know that I have access to read it. It's part of my five free reads each month. All right, so let's get to the nuts and bolts of it, and I'll probably spare you the editorial comments that were made by, I think it was Mark Story, wrote the piece. I'll spare you the editorial comments about getting rid of the secondary defender charge and some other elements, which I am all for. I've been saying it for 20 years that the secondary defender, he should not be allowed to just stand in the way and ruin the sport that we love. But let's get to some of the things that are going to be voted on. Where do you stand? I just kind of working top to bottom here. They're talking about resetting the foul count. Each half, you get 17 fouls, and then we go to 1-1, and then when you get to 10, they're two-shot fouls. The suggestion is that at the 10-minute mark of each half, that they reset to zero. Anything over five in the first, or maybe five and over in the first 10 minutes, you would go to the free throw line and shoot two. Where do you stand on something like that?
I think it's fine. It just seems like, to me at least, like this is a really sort of complicated thing to implement and keep straight in your head when you could just go to quarters.
Ha!
Like this is, you know what I mean? Like
yes.
This is an effort to basically impose free throw and sort of foul structure on a half that creates two quarters. You know, and all of this in the end is to try to get games done in exactly 2 hours. And we always have Jeff Walt, the Louisville women's coach, on. And he's like, I don't know why the men don't do quarters. Our games are always exactly 2 hours. Our games never start on ESPN News. He's like, this is what they're trying to do, but without just going to four quarters. And I got to be honest, I don't understand it. There are very few things more annoying than a game where somebody gets into the bonus, you know, 6 minutes into the second half. And now you know this second half is going to take forever because they're going to be shooting free throws for 15 minutes of game time. So, I mean, I like the idea of sort of keeping it going, a little, keeping it flowing a little bit more. And so I hope some of this goes in. I don't know why they don't just go to court.
I agree, but you know what? It's about if you do this, you lose one of those TV timeouts. And they don't want to lose those TV timeouts in the men's game. But I'm with you. They should go to quarters. They should just go to quarters and then tack on an additional 30 or 45 seconds to each of the TV breaks. Make the spots up there, but it would be much better for the game. They should time the game, at least in structure, maybe not length of game, but they should time the game just like they do the NBA game. What do you feel about six fouls before disqualification?
I don't see what the push for this was. Like, I didn't feel like we just played, for instance, an NCAA tournament where we just had player after player after player who didn't play because of five fouls, you know, was an issue. I know subs got two quick fouls, but you know what? He played 33 minutes in the championship game, so it ultimately wasn't a factor. I appreciate the fact that this is at least going to be global because I've talked to – we just had John Gatsoway on our show last week, and he talked about the Big East, you know, trying six fouls. And then they ended up abandoning it very quickly because they felt like it wasn't fair to their own team when they went to the tournament and everything else, and it was five. So I like that it's at least going to be global and everyone's going to get used to it. And I do like, if you're going to do it, at least saying it's not really six, it's just two halves of three, and so that you don't have guys just fouling and fouling and fouling like crazy in the second half of games. So at least they're trying to mitigate what I think is like the worst elements of it. But I would be lying to you if I said it's really clear to me what the impetus for this is. We had the fewest fouls in the NCAA tournament and the fewest fouls in the season in a long time this year. So I don't know what the driver is, but at least if they're going to do it and try to do it at least a little bit smarter way.
I think the driver is that they just don't want the best players being disqualified from games, and there's an easy way to remedy that. And we see it. I don't know if it's like summer league or things like that. You don't have to disqualify a player. You just put a penalty for every personal foul over somebody's fifth. Just make it a technical foul. They get two shots, then they get the ball back. They could do that and keep those guys on the court.
Yeah, the old, you know, before our time, but the old ABA did a lot of things like that, you know, where, you know, once you were over a certain team foul limit or a certain player was over a foul limit, you would just be one shot in the ball. And like, there are ways to build it in. I agree with you completely.
Yeah, by the way, I'd also be a fan of the red, white, and blue ball. Love that. And look, I grew up at Nassau Coliseum watching Julius Erving and the New York Nets play basketball. This, I think, is of all the things that they have talked about here, I think this is actually the best one. Held ball possession simply goes to the defense.
Oh, there are two of these that I actually read them, and I was like, good, and that's one of them. I really, really liked the idea. I think it's almost like an inverse of football, you know, where if the offensive player and the defensive player share possession of the ball, but it's a catch. This, I feel like, look, if the defensive player creates a held ball situation, they ended the possession, they get the ball. I totally love that because it doesn't seem fair to me that the result of a defensive player – tying up the ball with an offensive player is that half the time the offense just gets the ball right back. I love this rule. And I also, if I can just jump ahead of you, I like the idea of the team that has been fouled being able to basically decline free throws for the opportunity to just inbound the ball again. I like that.
Yeah.
I think it takes some of the air out of the hack-a-shack that you might do on teams that are not great free throw shooting teams, and it just lets you play more basketball. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, especially if you know you have a guy on the court who can't shoot free throws, you're obviously going to inbound the ball. You might want to inbound the ball anyway, just to keep it moving, because as you said earlier, nothing slows the game down like the clock stopping, so we can parade to the free throw line. Real quick, because I do want to get into just maybe a little bit about the editorial comment regarding the secondary defender taking a charge. I'm assuming that you at least glanced at that story. I've been saying this for more than a decade, that the worst part of basketball is a secondary defender just getting in the way, not even playing basketball. Nobody cares that you are defending that part of the wood. That should not be rewarded. If you're not making a play on the ball, I don't care. I don't care how long you've been standing there. You're not doing anything. I'm not rewarding that.
No, I think you and I, this might be a boring interview because I'm in lockstep with you. I don't think it's fair, and I don't think it really makes much sense to reward a guy who's not defending, who is, like you said, just standing there or guarding a portion of wood on the floor, that he can somehow draw a foul from a guy who's actually playing basketball and it's not the guy that's defending him. And I hate how often that is rewarded. When the guy really isn't trying to play defense, he's not making any kind of an effort. He literally is just standing there. Are you allowed to just bowl a guy over who's guarding you? Of course not. But if you stop enforcing sort of the off-ball defender, like, that's not going to open up the Wild West or anything. But I'm a big proponent of just calling way fewer of those anything at all.
Yeah.
I feel like this has been so funny to me, but I felt like when Louisville played Duke in the regional final, the Kevin Ware game, there was just one random play where Plumlee knocked Gorgie Jang over, and I felt like Gorgie kind of flopped, and Plumlee just saw him on the ground and dunked the ball and landed right on top of him, right? And I was like, good, do that. Don't call anything. Everyone just look at you on the ground while your guy is dunking, and you'll cut that crap out.
Yep. Stop rewarding it. Also, as people have joked, if they changed the actual signal that the referees make to either jazz hands or had them floss, we'd see less of those calls.
That's true. You know, the charge call is very much like a strikeout, and everyone loves that. You're right about that.
Bring that up to your listeners today. See if they would be in favor of getting rid of the charge if they change the call to the referees have to floss. Also, that would be a whole new level of training that they would need. Final thing from Mark Ennis, ESPN Louisville, and then we'll let you go. There were so many people who had lost their mind when the NCAA ultimately voted to allow the free transfer rule. And they talked about the transfer portal here. First of all, this has been going on for a long time. There have been tons of free moves because they've allowed exceptions. And secondly, how could we even get mad at it this year when we have, almost half of the players in the transfer portal are there because the NCAA gave everybody a free year because of the pandemic?
No, I think people are very much, and Dick Vitale is an ambassador for college basketball, like nobody else, and he's been like the doomsday guy about this. But this is, first of all, there are a lot of NCAA sports who have already had this. There are plenty of sort of non-revenue sports who you can transfer and play all the time, more than once. So to me, this is an opportunity. I'm in favor of anything that kind of shifts the labor to the coaches. And so to me, like, people are talking about, like, you're going to have to recruit your roster all the time. Yeah, that's fine. The coaches might actually have to go out of their way to make sure that all of their players are happy and want to stay there. And you know what? That's what the money's for. I'm sorry. Like, it just doesn't bother me that much. And I think at least – a large percentage of people are treating this like if you get to transfer every year. It's a one-time transfer. After that, you're going to have to sit and weigh your options and all that. And so to me, I don't have a problem with this. And I think the sooner whoever you are a fan of, the coach where you are a fan of, the sooner you start hearing your coach talk about how they can use it instead of how what they're worried about, the better.
I agree. I actually think it shouldn't even be a one-time thing. I would never charge him. But that's just me. I'm all about the wild, wild west and empowering players at every possible turn. Mark Ennis, you're a gentleman. At Mark Ennis on Twitter. He makes it easy. ESPN Louisville. We'll talk again.
Sounds good, buddy. Thank you.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.